Welcome back to another episode of Vanguard Radio. I'm your host, J. Richard Jones. Today we're going to talk about security. There are so many elements related to security. Of course, there are, you know, security awarenesses, there's strategy, there's governance, there's privacy and cybersecurity itself. But have you ever thought about if you had a secure, aware organizational culture, that it could minimize the human risk factor? And this is important, especially in these times when we have different working arrangements, work from home and work in an office. And we have a very special guest today joining us to talk about this. We're going to get into answering the question of how a security-aware organizational culture minimizes the human risk factor. Joining me today is Theo Seferakos. He is a CISO and professional services lead with Fortress Terra Nova Security. So Theo, welcome to the show. This is a fascinating topic, and I was reading some of the intro, and I know we were talking just before the show, and I asked you, you know, what is the one thing that you would like our listenership and readership to be left with about this show as we start jumping into issues related to security? And you said, never stop learning. And I think that's an interesting point. Can you share with us why you said that when it comes to security?
Especially when it comes to security, it becomes paramount because security technology threats continue to evolve and change at a very rapid pace. So everyone has to keep up and learn how to defend themselves, learn the different angles that they may be targeted from, and be well prepared. So that's why we have to always continue to learn and be informed.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Fortress Terra Nova has been around for quite a while, and you guys have been helping to transform the world's end user into having, you know, safe security policies in place. You've created cyber security heroes, really, in a way. But the statement that I think you make also is that technology alone does not provide an organization with foolproof protection against cyber attacks and data breaches. I mean, there is this human element. So as I kind of introed the show, what does it mean to you when you're talking about, you know, how this a security-aware organizational culture is going to minimize the human risk? What does that mean and how do you do it?
Yeah, and I want to step back, I think one step back before we get into that, and maybe define a little bit what security-aware culture means. And this is where we start talking about, you know, the beliefs that the individuals have when it comes to cyber threats. You know, they may believe that they're not a target or the threat is not real. What are the perceptions that they have when it comes to cybersecurity practices, right? You know, what is the harm of sharing my password with my colleague? I trust them, right? Or even their attitudes when it comes to cybersecurity, where they think it's not their problem, it's an IT responsibility, there is a technology in place. And how those three elements influence their behaviors when it comes to cybersecurity. So that's what we're talking about, culture. And typically culture starts, you know, in any aspect of our lives. It may start at home, it may start at the school, or when it comes to the government educating the citizens. And in many cases in those areas, you know, people haven't kept up with the pace, you know, how many parents talk to their kids about cybersecurity, or how many, you know, students learn about cybersecurity in the school environment. The government is trying to do its best to educate its citizens, but it's not sufficient. So now the organizations have to deal with this workforce that has no security mindset, zero cybersecurity culture, right? So this is now, it becomes a responsibility for those organizations to make sure that they start building this culture for their new employees, because now these new employees are working at your organization, they have access to your systems, they have access to your data. You know, an accident or, you know, or not paying attention could cause significant damages, disruption to operations. You know, could wreak havoc within the internal network or systems, and also damage the organization's reputation. So organizations have to start thinking, and so a lot of them do, but a lot of them don't at the same time. is, okay, well, how do I instill that culture, you know, within my workforce to make sure that we have that security? And like you mentioned, products, you know, by themselves do not guarantee security, because, you know, even those products are implemented by human beings. And we expect also human beings to use those products in a secure way and to protect themselves. You know, a perfect example that I have in that situation is multi-factor authentication, you know, the answer to password compromises. Well, you know, if we want to inform our users on two-factor authentication, well, we have to tell them to use it. But we also have to teach them, well, what are the potential risks that come now with this new technology that we're putting in place? Because even that has its own risks and potential vectors of attack. So we have to take all this onto consideration, because we have to give the users the knowledge and the skill set that they need in order to succeed in this environment. And what do we mean by succeed is defending against the human threats that may be targeting them. It's very important also to remember that we're talking about cybersecurity, whether on the offensive side, the attackers, the threat actors, or on the defensive side, we're always dealing with humans. There hasn't been a cybersecurity incident where a human was not involved, right? So that's why it's very important on the defensive side to take that human element into consideration.
Yeah, it's a very interesting point, because as you began explaining this, we're talking about humans having a deeper understanding of the cause and effect and not taking it so casually. But you're also talking about a culture and an environment that now is, it's in the home. It's what you live every day, not only in your career, but in your home. And to understand just how much of an impact, you know, these checks and balances can have to help improve security. And I think we're going to get into talking a little bit about some of the programs as well. Mm-hmm. But I think that would answer the question I would have, is like, why should an organization build a security aware culture? Because of the things you've said, I think that, would that be a safe assessment?
Correct. Having this aware culture could help you overcome, you know, future challenges in the work environment as well.
Yeah, I think it would be. And, you know, post-COVID, environments are not the same as they used to be. And, you know, everybody talks about zero trust, but you've got people working remotely. You've got people coming in to the office where protocols 4 years ago to protect from the outside in, now you may be protecting from the inside out, and because of that, the variances that go on. What would you say is one of the biggest challenges to building a security aware culture?
Well, the biggest challenges is a lot of times into building the culture, it has to start within the organization and the tone at the top, you know, establishing policies, the importance, and communicating down within the organization on why this is important, you know, almost becoming a condition of employment. You know, we have to complete a lot of other training within the organizations. Well, a portion has to be also related to, you know, the risks associated with technology use. We find organizations that, you know, that try to build an awareness program without establishing that tone at the top, communicating that it's important, they're going to face challenges down the road. Even if, you know, on the get-go, they say, well, we have this program in place, it's mandatory for everyone to complete, go do your training, it won't work. And we've seen in many situations that simply just using the stick approach is not enough to motivate the users, right? And there's a first level of motivation, which is, okay, well, getting on board, completing the training. But the second level of motivation is applying what I've learned at the right moment, right? Because that's where it becomes more important. Also, you don't want to waste, you know, your effort, you know, deploying training programs and content and creating content that nobody's going to follow, right? So if you don't have this, you know, build this mindset among your staff, you know, nobody's going to consume the activities that you put in place. And in many organizations, that becomes also a regulatory or a compliance challenge, because depending in the sector that they're in, you know, if they're dealing with health information, personal information of others, or even for their employees, you know, they have some requirements, external factors that are pushing them to protect this information, and also inform their staff on the requirements for and how to protect this information. So in implementing the awareness programs, we've also seen challenges around organizations who, you know, assign the responsibility to one member of IT, say, well, it's security, it's technology, go handle the program. But IT staff are not, you know, a change behavior change specialist, right? When we're talking about awareness and training, we're talking about changing behavior, informing, educating, very often adults, right, who are often set in their ways. So in order to properly implement an awareness program, you require a multidisciplinary team that, you know, may have participants from the HR team, if you have a change management team, marketing team to build communications, you know, that are speak to the users, compliance, or any other department that has a role and can contribute into the implementation of the program.
You know, it's interesting because we're talking about the training and it's got to come down from the top. We're also talking about, you know, change is hard. You know, you're in a lot of cases asking people who've been doing things a certain set way for a number of years to adapt new approaches. And, you know, you can have policies, you can have HR around that, but you really, it sounds like you have to have their buy-in, and they have to really embrace the rationale behind that. I would be curious to ask you, since you've done this all around the world, can you give us some examples of what some companies, private or public sector, did where it's working really well? We understand the challenges. How did they measure and how did they get the success that people could benefit from this type of culture?
Yeah. The first thing that we see in organizations that succeed is taking into consideration what motivates their users is often very different than what it motivates them, right? So if you start thinking about what is going to motivate and encourage my users to participate, such as maybe recognition from managers, and recognition doesn't always have to be monetary, right? You know, thank you for completing this. Thank you for reporting things. Thank you for doing the right thing could go a long way. Even recognition among peers, you know, we see a lot of users who, you know, when given the opportunity to contribute to the design of the program, they will participate. You know, have a survey at the beginning, ask them, what do you want to learn about? You know, let's build a program based on what interests you, right? And then build the program based on that. So it becomes very important. You know, think about, you know, what motivates them, you know, make it also on the personal side, you know, explaining to them that, you know, what you learn here could also help you in your personal environment, not just for your work environment. And that will encourage users to learn. Give them material that they could share with their families or those around them, right? You know, here's some information that you could share with your children to help them be as cyber safe online, you know, when they're playing the video games or surfing social media. And so once you start taking those aspects into consideration, you have a lot more success in your program. Another component that we have seen in organizations that have successfully implemented a program and started seeing that change is establishing what we call cybersecurity ambassadors. And these are representatives either in remote locations, offices, departments, just because the cybersecurity team doesn't have, you know, presence everywhere. Well, let's identify these ambassadors that could officially represent cybersecurity and promote the awareness activities, and also put them into context. You know, a factory worker faces different threats and different challenges compared to an office worker. Well, how do we explain it to them and what it means for them in their work and personal environment versus to someone who is working in the office? So a formal ambassador program that is well managed could help drive the program and bring it to the next maturity level.
That makes a lot of sense. I would imagine as well, when you're hiring, you want to look for certain characteristics in the staff that you're bringing on. Have you seen a big change in that? Can you find these kinds of traits in people that you're hiring today, or does it have to be homegrown?
Well, a lot of times I think security, culture, and perception is not one of the components that gets evaluated upon hiring. But we've seen a lot of organizations targeting the new hires from the very beginning to start slowly establishing that culture, right, from the very beginning. New hires typically want to impress the organization. They want to do the right thing. They don't, you know, they haven't had, they don't know what the, you know, how things are previously done within the organization. They're brand new. So they're much easier to influence and start adopting that new culture at the beginning by providing the proper training and the proper communications. A lot of times also focus on in-person training, right? Through, you know, lunch learns or webinars where people could actively participate and ask questions. That could also help them, right? So, you know, having onboarding sessions for my new hires, you know, training them, giving them best practices, then they'll see this organization as taking cybersecurity seriously, right? And then they will start adopting that mindset from the very beginning.
So we've covered, you know, some of the things that can be done to build a security-aware culture. But my next question would be, how do you spot a security-aware cultural shift in business?
Well, when it comes to culture and security, the most important elements I like to talk about is communication, right? And from a communication perspective, we want to have staff that is not afraid to ask questions when they don't know how to do something, right? To say, well, I want to do this. I want to send a secure document. Instead of going ahead and doing it by email or another fashion, they'll ask the question. Also, they're not afraid to raise their hand if they've done something wrong, right? Oh, oops, I sent this file by mistake. I can't retrieve it. Can we please get an action on board so we could recover that information and prevent the damages from causing too much harm, right? They're not afraid because of the consequences, and they'll raise their hand. Also, they will take the initiative, right? When they see something wrong or they see something doing something wrong, they will not ignore it because it's not their responsibility. For example, you're walking by, a printer and you see a confidential document sitting on the printer. Well, you take it, you shred it, you try to find the owner instead of just leaving it there being exposed. So they step up when it comes to the cybersecurity. And then they socialize among themselves. You know, when they see a peer, sharing their password or adopting an insecure behavior, they will politely comment and inform the user, well, or their colleague on, you know, this is not how you do it. This is how you do it, and so on. So then the cybersecurity culture becomes infectious and starts spreading within the organization.
That makes a lot of sense. Fortress Terra Nova Security organizes a free global phishing simulation annually named the Gone Phishing Tournament. Mm-hmm. Love the name. Mm-hmm. And you guys publish a benchmark global report with the findings. I think it'd be really interesting for our listeners and readership if you could maybe share some of the insights that have come out from your 2022 GPT results. Do you have any stats available?
Yes, so this event started about 4 years ago, and we've been conducting it every year. And it's open to any organization around the world to participate in this event that takes place in October. Pre-registration is already open. In the last event that we did, we were trying to harvest passwords. So are users willing to click on a link? And once they click on a link, you know, are they willing to share their password on this non-secure website? And we noticed that 7% of the recipients clicked on the link. We see a lot of times users clicking on a link because they don't think there's a harm that could happen from clicking on a link, which is not true. So it was a promise of a $25 gift card for responding to one question survey. So once they clicked on the link, they respond to the survey, then to be eligible for the gift card, they had to log in with a username and a password. And this is where we see the cross between personal gain for the exchange of a corporate piece of information, which is the password. So users who are willing to share the corporate password to be registered to receive a $25 gift card, which is personal for personal spending. About half of those who clicked on the link went ahead and submitted their password on a website that was not secured. It didn't have HTTPS, it didn't have a padlock. In many cases, the browser might even flash red and say, well, this site is not secure, yet people wanted that gift card really, really badly. So they went ahead and they shared their password.
Yeah, it sounds like a great report. Where could we direct our listenership to if they wanted to see any of this information or to participate?
Yes, so on our website, so terranovasecurity.com, you could find all the information from the past report. The past report is available for download, but also you could start the pre-registration for the event coming up in October. So that's terranovasecurity.com.
Yeah, sounds like a great event. Theo, I'd like to move on to talk a little more about third-party risk management, if that's okay.
Yes, yes.
So just how big of a threat is this? Like, why should an organization be concerned about third-party risk management?
Well, we've seen it very often in the news and recently with organizations being compromised through their partners, through the supply chain. This has always been a concern, but it has made it up to a top concern a lot more in the recent years. And a lot of times we deal with third parties, we deal with suppliers that have access to the same systems, the same data, the same networks as our employees. So how do we secure that supply chain and all those suppliers and providers to keep our own business safe? And let's not forget that those third parties may be dealing with fourth parties and fifth parties, right? So the chain could go very, very long. So how do we make sure that everyone down the chain is secure? It's important for organizations. Third-party risk management is part of any organization's overall risk management, but we have to add cybersecurity and specifically awareness to it. Many organizations deal with third parties. Those third parties tend to vary in size and security maturity, right? In all aspects, not just from an awareness perspective. But awareness tends to be the element that most organizations, is at the bottom of their priority list. You know, they may have firewalls, they may have antivirus in places, but awareness programs may not be as predominant in these third-party suppliers, tend to be smaller in size or very niche in the products that they deliver. So that's why organizations now have to start extending on their expectations for awareness to the third parties. A very common attack, which is known as the business email compromise, is when a supplier has been compromised, their email has been taken over by a cyber criminal, and now it's being used to target their clients. Cyber criminals will use that method to get into large organizations because they know that large organizations have, proper security controls in place, proper awareness programs in place, and they attempt to get in through their suppliers. Now, imagine you're working for an organization and you see an email from your supplier. You've been trained to check for email domains and sender domains, and they look accurate. They look, what you expect them to be. But how do you know that now that on the other end, this email has been compromised by an attacker and it's being controlled by an attacker? You as a recipient, as the company, has lost one check, right, that you have because now the email is coming from a trusted entity. So now you have to look at it and say, well, is it asking me to bypass instructions or, do something out of the ordinary? So this is why we have to rely on securing the third parties to make sure that the whole supply chain is secure from the very beginning.
So is it safe to say when you're dealing with third-party risk management that cybersecurity is the biggest threat?
Well, a lot of times from a cybersecurity, the awareness perspective is one of the biggest threats because the employees may not have been informed. Third-party risk management covers overall a lot of elements from a risk management, from an enterprise risk management. Cybersecurity must be one of them. Awareness must be one of them.
Interesting stuff. Theo, since you're going to be at CANSEC this year, can you share a little bit of a sneak peek with our readership and listeners as to what to expect from your company this year?
Yes, if you want to come and learn more about our products and services, we invite you over to booth CL5. Get a free live demo on video cyber challenges, serious games, and other activities that we have through our platform.
Yeah, it sounds very interesting. You've been listening to Vanguard Radio, and we've had the pleasure of chatting with Theo Zevrakos, who is CISO and Professional Services Lead with Fortress Terra Nova Security. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the show, and I look forward to seeing some of those report elements as well. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
The views, information, or opinions expressed during the Vanguard Weekly Podcast Series, CGE Weekly Podcast Series, Vanguard Radio Podcast, and CGE Radio Podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not represent those of Vanguard or any affiliated media products, their employees, or owners. Vanguard Magazine, Canadian Government Executive Magazine, and its affiliates are not responsible for and do not verify for accuracy any of the information contained in this podcast series. This podcast may not be copied or distributed without express written approval of Promotive Communications, Inc., PCI. You may not edit, modify, or redistribute this podcast without consent from PCI. PCI assumes no liability for activities in connection with this podcast or for use of this podcast with any other website, computer, or playing device.